skies for amber waves of grace.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us today Steve Kiba. And, of course, we're going to be talking, or it's Kiba or Kiba, Steve?
Kiba, yeah.
Kiba, okay, we're going to be talking about his book, The Flag, My Story, Kidnapped by Red China. And Steve, of course, was a young, idealistic, did you join the military or were you drafted?
No, I enlisted, yeah.
All right, and of course, it was his first flight over North Korea,
right.
Back there during the Korean War. Then this whole incredible story began. And, of course, I'm going to let you tell the story, Steve. Why don't you go ahead and just begin at the beginning and go on from there?
Okay, we're flying a routine leaflet drop mission over North Korea. This was on the night of January 12th, 1953. We were flying in a stripped-down B-29. We were with a new outfit. It was called the 581st Air Resupply and Communications Wing. Our primary mission was to fly low-level, treetop level, and drop supplies and agents and so forth behind enemy lines. Our secondary mission was leaflet drop.
Now, what were you trying to do, influence the North Korean troops? Was that it?
Yeah, the North Korean and the Chinese, and also to let them know that our bombers would bomb the villages several nights later, you know.
All right. Okay, so you're flying over North Korea here at 1953. Had the armistice been signed yet?
No.
All right, fine. So what happens?
Well, we were caught in searchlights. They picked us up by searchlights as we were approaching our third or fourth target. And we lost them, and then they picked us up again, and they start shooting AK-AK at us, and MiG-15 start attacking us. So we were being simultaneously attacked from the ground and by the MiGs. And within a few minutes, they had knocked out three of our engines. An explosion from the ground hit us in the forward bomb bay. And so we were forced to bail out.
Well, now, why were they sending literally unarmed planes there? You had a tail gunner, but that's about all.
That was it.
Why were they sending really unarmed planes over there when they had, you know, they had their MiGs that could shoot you down? That doesn't sound very logical.
No, it doesn't, but we were, in our outfit, our CO was getting a little antsy, and he wanted to get some action, so he volunteered us. And we had to fly our own planes, which was stripped down, you know.
All right, fine. So you're flying, a plane is hit, and certainly the plane is on fire. It's very obvious you've lost three of your engines, and the plane's going to go down. And when we get back, why, of course, we'll tell you more of this incredible, incredible story. You read this book, I will tell you it. It's a story of heroism, a story of anger, a story of betrayal, because, of course, Steve was told when he came back he was not to tell this story. It would harm the boys. You know, it would harm negotiations. All of the things they always tell our boys to keep the American people from learning the truth. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Steve Kiva, and we're talking about his book, The Flag. And Steve was a radio operator on a B-29 that was shot down over North Korea in 1953. They were simply dropping pamphlets at the time, or dropping leaflets over there, and it's in the middle of the night. The plane is shot down. It's pretty cold, and it's wintertime, isn't it?
Yes, January 12th. The temperature on the ground was 30 below zero. Temperature at our altitude was 50 below.
All right, fine. So what happens? You are forced to bail out of the plane. Does most of the people get out of the plane or not?
Well, there were 14 men on board. We had three extra men. The wing commander was with us, and we had an extra radar man, and then we had an instructor pilot from the 91st Strat Recon. The 13 of us got out of the plane. The tail gunner, we think, was killed in place because the MiGs attacked the tail first. So they knew that we were unarmed somehow. But 13 of us did bail out. And the afternoon after they picked me up...
All right, now you were able to get down to the ground all right. And
yes.
It must have been freezing cold when you got there. Was it at nighttime?
At nighttime, yes.
All right, so then what happened?
After I hit the ground, I was completely frozen. I could barely close my fist. It took me an hour to get out of my parachute harness and get it off and to get rid of my vest. Of course, the chute shroud lines were tangled up in the little bushes I had come through, and I couldn't hide it. So I sat there for a while, and I kept getting colder, so I decided I better get up and walk and at the same time look for two of the crewmen who were injured. The navigator, whose position was across the mine, he was injured, and the instructor pilot was sitting on the step of the nose wheel, he was injured. So I was looking for them, so I spent all night looking for them.
All right, fine. Now, we're going to be back in just a moment here. We're going to bring on our last affiliate station, and then we'll be back with you. And we'll talk more about what happened. Our guest today is Steve Kiba. We're talking about his book, The Flag. And, of course, when he finally did get back to America, why the government kept telling him, we don't want you to talk about this. And, of course, they put all sorts of pressure on not only he, but any of the people who came back not to talk about the torture and the mistreatment of our adversaries. You have to ask yourself, why was our government protecting the Chinese communists? We'll be right back. All right, Dr. Stan back here, and of course our guest this afternoon is Steve Kiba, his book, The Flag. And of course Steve was telling us, of course, he gets out of the plane, he's able to parachute out of the plane, he gets to the ground, it's 30 below zero, it's freezing, he's having difficulty moving at all, but he decides he gets out of his parachute, and he's going to begin now trying to walk. And so what happened?
Well, as I say, I walked all, just about all night. Of course, there's a very heavy wind that night, so besides the 30 below, I don't know what the wind chill would be. They didn't calculate it back then, you know.
All right, fine. Now, how far were you from the border, from the American lines?
Okay, we were just about between 20 to 40 miles below the Yalu River, so we were hundreds of miles, you know, above our lines. So we were deep in North Korea.
All right, fine. So morning comes, and what happens?
Well, I crawl under a ledge, try to get the wind off of me, and I was watching because they were searching in the valley below. And so I watched them to about noon, and I kept getting colder, and I was getting numb all over. So after they left, the search party left around noon or so, and I decided to come down out the hills and try to get help because I was afraid I'd freeze to death. And we had the underground set up that could help us. And when I got down into the valley, an older couple came out of a house, and they gave me the correct signal. But I made a drastic mistake. Instead of following the couple, I went to the door of the house. And then... middle-aged lady let me in, and she saw I was all frozen up. My face was swollen. Hands were all swollen up twice normal size. They were black and real dark purple, you know. And she got some hot coals and let me warm my hands. And while I was talking to her, a little kid, he's maybe 3-4 years old, I realized she's gone. And I turned to go to the door. And about that time, the door swung open, and about 8 militiamen came in and grabbed me and searched me, took my gun, and took my blood shit and was reading and making fun of it. And then a few minutes later, about 8 other militiamen come in, and the one that was a leader took the gun, and they led me down. We left the house, and they led me down the valley, and as we were going down, more and more people kept coming. And by the time we got down to a fork in the road where Chinese were waiting for us, we had 200 or 300 people.
Now, these were Korean civilians?
Yeah, these were Koreans.
And so you should have then followed the family rather than going into the house.
Then possibly I might not have gotten captured. But.
All right, fine. Well, anyway, so they take you down. The Chinese communists are there. Now, the Chinese communists, we were told they were volunteers. Actually, they were agents of the Chinese communist government.
Right.
And, of course, then, of course, you were turned over to the Chinese communists because the Koreans didn't want you. Was that it?
That was it. And they said that when got into the interrogations, they said they were waiting for us. They knew we were coming.
Now, well, that happens so often. If you study what happens, time and again, our men are sent into ambushes, as they were. And the Black Hawk Down, those of you who saw that film with Mel Gibson, We Were Soldiers, I can give you example after example after example when our men have been intentionally sent into ambushes. That was an ambush in Black Hawk Down, an ambush in We Were Soldiers. And you were sent into an ambush, too. So obviously we had people on our side who really weren't on our side at all.
Right. In fact, in one of the interrogations, I kept lying to them and giving them incorrect answers. And they said, you know, you don't need to lie to us. We have all the information here. And they showed me a notebook, which is about 3-4 inches thick, with everything about our outfit from the time that, you know, it was organized. And they pointed out the answers, and they pointed out where I was lying to them, you know. Said, we don't need your answers. We have them all right here.
And, of course, just as today, they're collecting information on every American. That's right. What the communists always do. They collect all sorts of information. And just as the government today is collecting information on all the people here in the name of fighting terrorism, so the communists had all the information on you and, of course, your unit. So what happened? Were you kept there in North Korea? When were you taken into communist China?
Okay, we were held in North Korea only 3 days. Let's see, the 13th, 14th, 15th, well, 4 days. On the evening of the 16th, one of the interrogators came in. And he told me that I was going to take a trip, and I was being taken to a better place. And I asked him, well, you're taking me to Red China, aren't you? He said, well, yes, but, and I said, can you go with us? He said, no, I have to stay here in Korea, you know. And so that night, they took me and put me on a train, and after about a 12, 14-hour train ride, I ended up in Manchuria up in the city of Mukden.
All right, fine. So now, of course, were you how badly were you treated by the North Koreans, and were you treated far worse by the Chinese communists?
Well, actually, yeah, wasn't in the hands of North Koreans, but the, you know, just for the brief time that they took me down and turned me into over to the Chinese. Now, physically, it depends on, you know. What you call torture and so forth. Actually, as far as beating, they didn't do that too much. But they did starve you. They withheld your water.
And they wouldn't turn the lights out so you couldn't sleep. Is that right?
Right. They would shine lights in your eyes. They would throw rocks at you while you try and sleep.
Sort of like we're doing to the people down in Guantanamo today, but everybody thinks that's all right because they're bad guys.
Right.
But if there's then, of course, you are in communist China, and of course you are a prisoner of war, but they don't acknowledge you're a prisoner of war.
No, they claim that we were war criminals. They said that the leaflets we were dropping were laced with germs. And then they said that we were working for the CIA. They claimed that we intruded into Red China. Even though they took us in on the train, they claimed that we intruded, you know.
Well, now, Kirsten, what about the other men on the plane?
Okay, for the during the interrogation period, we were all kept isolated.
And you were more or less in solitary confinement?
Solitary confinement, yes.
Well, what's it like in solitary confinement? I mean, what do you do with your mind? How do you keep from going crazy?
Well, what I did, I tried to pester the guards as much as I could, you know. And, you know, just keep my mind occupied. We weren't allowed to walk in the cell, and I'd get up and walk anyway. And they tried to make me sit on the board. We didn't have beds. We had bed boards that sat about 8 inches off the ground, and you had a plank on it about 2.5 feet wide and about 6 feet long, and the boards were about 3/4 inch or so. And they wanted you to sit on that board, and they would put an imaginary X on the wall, and they wanted you to stare at it.
So they're playing games with your minds, is what they're doing.
I'd look at it while they were there, and then as soon as they left the cell, I would look away or lean back against the wall, or I'd get up and walk.
Now, what about the interrogation that you had under the Chinese communists?
Well, the interrogations were rather rough. It would last anywhere from a couple hours up to 24 or more hours.
24 hours without any sleep or
without
anything,
any
just
sleep
constantly badgering you? What were they trying to get you to say?
They were asking you all kinds of questions about your outfit. They want to know about the other crew members. Just all kinds of crap like that, you know. And then, too, they would use that time to try to indoctrinate you, trying to teach you the virtues of communism and pointing out the bad things about our former government.
All right, fine. And so then, of course, what would you do? How would you respond to that?
Well, when they would talk about the communist stuff, I'd call it bulls. You know, I'd tell them a bunch of bulls. I wasn't about to go along with them. And, of course, when he asked the questions, I would lie to them as much as I could, you know.
But didn't they know that you were lying to them?
They knew because they had the interrogator, then they had the interpreter, and they had a recorder.
Now, didn't they have people who spoke pretty good English?
Yeah, they spoke perfectly English, right?
Right.
In fact, all of them spoke English, but the only one that would speak English would be the interpreter at the time. But the interrogator could also speak it, and the recorder could, too. And they would write down word for word what you said. And then if you lied to them, they would come back a week later and ask the same question, and you couldn't remember what you said, you might tell another lie, then they would point that out to you.
Oh, well, then what would they do if they found you were telling, you were obviously telling a lie?
Well, you'd get a long lecture, or they would threaten to kill you. And two, if you didn't answer properly, when I was in Buckton there, in the interrogation room, the guard would stand behind you with a rifle. And each time that the interrogator would get excited, raise his voice, the guard would jab you in the back with the barrel of his rifle. And that was happening all the time because they didn't like my answers.
All right, fine. So this keeps up for how long?
Well, I went through about a little over 3 weeks in Buckton, and then they moved me from Buckton. It took another long train ride, about 12, 14 hours, and ended up in Peking. And here again, the interrogation started, and same thing, they were lasting a few hours up to 24 or more.
Okay.
And if they were short sessions, they'd take you back to the cell, leave you there about half hour, and take you right back up and start over again.
Well, what were they trying to accomplish?
I don't know, because they knew all the answers already.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a couple of minutes here at Radio Liberty, and of course, we'll invite your calls here at after the half hour at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. tapes yet, genocide. And one of the tapes is an interview with a Dr. Dunigan who heard back in 1969 actually a talk given by Dr. Day, who would later become the president of Planned Parenthood. And Dr. Day laid out the whole plan for America. The fact there are too many people, the fact that we're going to have to create new diseases, the fact that we're going to have to conceal some of the very obvious treatments for cancer, because people are going to have to die of something. They might as well die of cancer. An incredible interview, and a series of other interviews that will go into the background of what is happening in America, why new diseases are cropping up all the time. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of our four-tape set, Genocide. It's vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. America, our values, our future are under attack today.
Hello, garlic lovers. This is Radio Health journalist Bill Sardi to talk to you about a breakthrough in garlic technology. It's called Alamex. You know all the healthy reasons to take garlic, but isn't it time you got your money's worth? A recent study found the 24 leading brands of garlic pills provided little, if any, allicin, garlic's primary active ingredient. Try Alamex, which is the only odorless garlic supplement to provide pure allicin, a full 180 milligrams. That's the power of 15 fresh cloves of garlic. Alamex isn't available in stores, so call 866-405-4000. That's Alamex at 866-405-4000.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time I just want to mention the Big Berkey water filters. And the Big Berkey is a standard water filter. It's been used for 150 years. It's made out of stainless steel. It'll filter 25 gallons of water a day through ceramic filters that are packed with activated charcoal. It'll take out the bacteria and, of course, most of the heavy metals and most of the toxic substances. It's an excellent water filter to give you potable water. It's portable, or you can use it in your home. And, of course, the Big Berkey ordinarily sells for $279. We actually offer them for $239. And if you buy it through Radio Liberty, you get a four-tape set or a video that we produce. Now, unfortunately, the Big Berkey is not available in either California or Iowa. However, there is another water filter that is available here. It's called a Berkey Light. And instead of being made out of stainless steel, it's transparent, so you can actually see the water levels. The filters are different. They're called the Black Berkey filters, and they're really purification filters. They work far better even than the other filters. They'll take out all the bacteria. They'll take out the MTB. They'll take out so many of the minerals and pesticides and things of that sort. And, of course, this is the Berkey Light. And those ordinarily sell for $199. Now, if you want to get them with lights, that's an extra $60. But the Berkey Light works very well, and it's available through Radio Liberty, and you'll also get a four-tape set, or you'll get one of the videos that we produced. If you buy it through Radio Liberty, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then, of course, you can see these at our website at RadioLiberty.com. Now, if you want to get out the fluoride and the arsenic, and, of course, with the Big Berkey, the MTBE, because, of course, you can't get that out with the ceramic filters. Why, there are post-filters, either four, they call them PF4 filters for the Big Berkey or PF2 filters for the Berkey Light. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for the Berkey water filters. Well, Dr. Stan back here, our special guest this afternoon is Steve Kiba, and we're talking about his experiences when he was in Korea there, and now he, of course, he's in communist China, and they're just questioning them incessantly, really trying to, they're trying to break your spirit, weren't they?
Yes.
All right, fine. Now, do you have a chance to see any of the other men who were captured with you at the time, or do you know that they're there?
I knew that they were there. That when we were captured, that when they moved us, that we removed a couple of us, we moved together, then they split us up. And then when we were in the cells being interrogated, I saw the extra radar man, his name, Paul Van Voorhees. And the Chinese said they had captured two men as they hit the ground. Of course, when we came back, we found out that Van Voorhis and Weiss didn't come out, and they were the two that were captured the night that we were shot down.
All right, fine.
The others came home.
All right, fine. Well, then what happened after that? So you're there, and you're in China. You're being constantly interrogated, I mean, 24 hours at a time. You're not getting much in the way of sleep. Do they keep the lights on all the time there as well?
Yes, uh-huh.
All right.
There's a light on in the cell at all times. Of course, it's a weak, very weak bulb, you know.
Well, of course, I suspect that everything there is weak because of the lack of electricity. So then what happens? How long were you here at this area?
I was kept in downtown taking a prisoner called the hotel because of the filth and everything. I was kept there a couple months, interrogated day and night. And here, instead of the pistol in my back, the rifle... in my back, the guard would hold a machine pistol to your temple, and he'd crush your temple with it as they were interrogating you, you know.
All right, so what happens then after a while? How long were you there at the hotel and all?
Well, we moved from there around the 1st of April or so, and then they took us on the outskirts of Peking to another prison, and I was put in the cell there, and the interrogations continued there. And here now, lots of times they would send in questions to your cell, and then other times they'd come wake you up and take you in. And again, these were going on, you know, day and night. And on the way there, the guard kept shoving your head down so you couldn't look around. You know, they wanted you to keep your head on your chest, and I kept lifting it up and trying to see where they're taking me, you know. And here they really started the indoctrination, trying to turn me into a communist, you know. But I wasn't a very fast learner.
All right, so what happens after that? And how long were you there, and then did they move you on from there?
No, we spent most rest of the time here at a place I call the spider web. And, of course, we were in solitary up until after the interrogation period, which ended about 8 months. That would be in August of 1953. And at that time, they moved me in with another crew member, Dan Schmidt from Idaho, and they moved some of the others into the same cell block, but in different cells, you know. And we were like this for several months. And then in October of 1954, they called us in and accused us of, you know, intruding, and they said we're being put on trial. And then on the 10th of October, they took us downtown and to the courtroom, and they had a big showcase trial for us. And of course, we were guilty before we appeared, you know. And they said that the case was so bad that they couldn't make a decision at that time, so they sent us back to the prison.
Now, basically, you were accused of being a spy for the CIA?
Spies for the CIA, right.
All right. And so then what happened?
Well, after they sent us back to the prison, then on November 23rd, they called us back. They took us back downtown to the courtroom, and they sentenced us as spies. They convicted us as war criminals, and... we were sentenced through various terms.
And for how long a time?
Okay, I got 4 years. The airmen, the lower ranks, got 4 years. Some of the officers got five. Captain Brady got eight.
All right, we're going to be back in just a minute, and we'll be right back here to tell the rest of this incredible, incredible story of this young man, American. He's taken into China. He's convicted of being a war criminal. And all he's doing is just doing his job. We'll be right back here at Radio Liberty. A
very important book is called AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991 that tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working with an organized medicine. The fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working with an organized medicine, both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background of this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I simply want to mention that if you don't have a Phenoply set and you have children or grandchildren in a government school, why, shame on you. Basically, the children today are being not taught how to read phonetically. They're being taught by a look-see method that was destined to fail. It was known that it would fail 100 years ago because they're trying to dumb down our children. And when you understand that, I have to ask, why would you want your children in a government school? If there's any way to get them out, get them out. But one of the things you need right now for them is a Phenoply set that will teach them how to read and spell and pronounce words phonetically. They're bored. This is a board game. It's played like Phenoply, pardon me, like Monopoly. But, of course, it will teach you the 40 sounds of the English language, the 12 rules of the English language. Most of these programs are $300, $400, $500, $600. This is $139.95. Just call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for Phenoply. And then I want to tell you about our Miracle 2 soap products. And, of course, Miracle 2 soap products, we can't make any medical claims for them, but I will tell you that many of the people who use those products tell us the wonderful things they've done for them. There's a soap. There is a moisturizing soap. There is a gel, there is a lotion, and there's a neutralizing solution, which some people take for heartburn. They say that it helps them. It's a very alkaline solution, and all you can do is try it and see if it helps. We, of course, offer this. If you'd like more information, you can give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 5-HIV, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And, of course, you can buy the introductory set of the various items we've mentioned at a discounted price. All I can say is that the people who use these products, many of them tell us they are miraculous. Give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for Miracle 2. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and I guess this afternoon is Steve Keeble, and we're talking about his book, The Flag. And, of course, he is in communist China. He's being questioned after 8 months of questioning. He's tried, convicted. He's given 4 years in prison. So then what happened, Steve?
Okay, shortly after we were sentenced, in fact, it was December 7th of 1954, the Chinese moved the nine of us, that would be everyone except Colonel Arnold and Major Bomber and the two radar men. They moved us into a cell block, and that afternoon they moved in two other people with us. One was John Downey, who was CIA, and Richard Fechtel. And they 11 stayed with us for 3 weeks. They moved them in on December 7th, and then on December 28th, with no explanation, they moved them out.
Now, this is a year after you've been captured.
Yes.
Okay, fine. So, of course, but why? What is that all about, do you know?
I think they were trying to make the world believe that we were connected. In fact, they were insinuating that John Downey was running our outfit and that he was in charge of our mission. Of course, the night we flew, he was already sitting in prison in Mufton.
All right, fine. So basically, then how long were you in prison after that? And what's being done in the United States to try to get you home? By this time, of course, they had signed the armistice, and had they exchanged the prisoners at that time?
They had, yeah. They signed, the armistice was signed July 27th in 1953, and of course they had a little switch before that, and then they had the regular switch of prisoners.
All right, so they sent the prisoners home under your cell, languishing in prison in communist China. So what happens after that?
Well, I knew that the war was over, so I kept telling them the war was over, and they kept denying it, and finally said our case is different, you know, and. Then, of course, after they put down the infecto with us, in with us, and then they, after they took them out, they continued the re-education thing, trying to, you know, get us to become communists. And this went on for several months, and they figured they weren't getting anywhere, because on July 31st of 1955, they called us in and said they're deporting us. And so they put us on a train and shipped us down to Hong Kong and turned us over to the British. And the British, of course, turned us over to the Americans.
All right.
Because in the interrogation, they kept telling us, you know, that nobody cared about us. Nobody knew we were alive, and they didn't care.
All right. Why did they release you?
We figured it was to try to gain the world sympathy and make them think, you know, here the Chinese are real lenient and so forth. In fact, they had a big propaganda party for us in January of 1955, January 9th of 1955, where they brought the Night of Us and Colonel Arnold and Downey Infecto together, and they had a party. They gave us a supper, had us out in the outside and taking pictures of us, and they took all kinds of propaganda pictures and sent them home with Dag Hammarskjöld. They were just trying to show the world how good they were, you know, how well they were treating the prisoners.
All right. Well, did they give you enough to eat? And ordinarily, did you have?
You were always hungry. I mean, your stomach was always cramping and hurting. In fact, they didn't during the interrogation period. They wouldn't give you food or water. You'd go weeks without food and a week or more without water, you know.
Okay.
They say you can't live over a week without water. Well, you can do it.
It's just pretty hard. Let's go to Spencer calling. Spencer, do you have a question or comment?
Yes, sir, and thank you, Steve, for serving for your country. I'd like to ask Steve if he thought that President Truman's idea to seize Formosa was the right motive for the war, and also
what are you talking about? President Truman wants to seize Formosa.
That's the way I understand it.
It had nothing to do with the war at all. Thank you so much for calling. The war had nothing to do. In fact, by that time, by 1950, General Chiang Kai-shek was on Formosa, he had rearmed his troops. And, of course, we put the 7th Fleet between Formosa and the mainland so that the Chinese communists could take two armies from the mainland. We were protecting the Chinese communists from the nationalists on Formosa, and they moved their two armies up into Manchuria. Now, that's an incredible story. Why would we protect the Chinese communists who were killing our boys? Read the story. It's in MacArthur's reminiscences. It's in General Courtney Whitney's book, MacArthur is Rendezvous with History. We protected the Chinese communists so they could have their armies free to kill our boys. Doesn't make sense, but then so much of what goes on in the world today really doesn't make sense. So anyway, of course, now you're taken to Hong Kong, you're turned over to the British, and you're coming home.
Okay, we were debriefed then, they asked about our treatment and so forth, and I told them, you know, that I had seen Van Voorhees and that Downey and Infecto were there, and that I passed on a message that Infecto gave me. I passed that on to them. And
in other words, they didn't release all the prisoners, and a lot of the prisoners have never been released, have they?
No, no.
And our government knows that. But when you came back, you were told not to talk about it. Was that it?
That's correct.
How did they threaten you? How did they get you to keep quiet and not to try to tell the American people the truth about your brutal treatment and the fact that our government had abandoned many of those boys?
They just warned us not to talk about it, and of course we were all in the service at that time. So I got out. I got fed up with it, and I got out, and I started talking about it, and I started trying to, in fact, I tried to contact Down Infecto in China, and of course my letters wouldn't go through, and I tried to talk to the newspapers, and nobody listened to me.
Nobody wanted to hear that we'd abandoned our boys.
Nobody wanted to hear
it. We abandoned 8,000 of our boys in Korea. And it was never a war. It was a police action. In fact, there were agreements made ahead of time that we would never try to win the war.
Right.
And if you read MacArthur's reminiscences, he will tell you, he quotes General Lin Piao, who headed the Chinese Communist Forces, and he said, I would never have risked my troops and my military reputation and attract the across the Yalu if I had not been guaranteed that Washington would restrain General MacArthur from retaliating against my lines of supply. I never would have attacked if I hadn't been guaranteed that Washington would restrain General MacArthur from attacking my lines of communication. Now, the Chinese communists knew what the American generals in Korea didn't know, what our boys didn't know, and that it was a phony war, just like Vietnam was a phony war. So, and in fact, even our latest war in Iraq, which is so, I mean, everybody thinks it's really great, but why was it that the Iraqis didn't use their 115 planes? Were they saving them for the next war? Why didn't they use their helicopters? Why didn't they use their surface-to-air missiles? Why didn't they blow up the bridges and mine the roads? And why did they tell the Republican Guard simply to take off the uniforms and go home? What did General Rumsfeld know before the war that the American generals didn't know? Things are never what they appear to be. But, of course, you, Steve, you're coming home, you're trying to get the word out, you're trying to tell them about the boys we abandoned and, of course, left there to die or to be tortured to death. And the Army's trying to keep you quiet, and nobody in the media wants to hear your story.
That's true, right.
So what happened?
Well, I started putting my, start making notes and, recording everything that went on, and then I finished a manuscript in 1959 and I tried to get it published and nobody would touch it. You know, I sent it to all kinds of places. They would look at it and say, it's good, but, you know, it says, it's not the time for a war story, you know, or something to that effect.
Sure. Well, of course, you have to understand, I don't know whether you know it or not, but the CIA has their agent planted in most of the major publishers. Now, some of the smaller publishers will publish books like yours, and you have a publisher that has done a pretty good job with your book. But basically, the people who control our reality, the people who have their agents planted in all the major publishers, you know, the major publisher wouldn't dare to publish a book, or they'd get into all sorts of problems.
Right.
And the same thing is true with many of our people who work in the media. And those of you who haven't read Kristen Breitweiser's wonderful book, Into the Buzzsaw, need to get it and read it. 18 essays by award-winning producers and Pulitzer Prize-winning writers who tried to tell the truth and, of course, could never again get the job working for the media in free America where we have freedom of speech. You need to get this information. Kristen Breitweiser's wonderful book, Into the Buzzsaw, gives you insight into what happens when a reporter or a producer at CBS or ABC tries to tell the truth. So then, of course, Steve, eventually somebody came and helps you get the book written and published?
Well, I reworked it several times. You know, when I'd send it off, they'd tell me it's either too long or, you know, different things, and I'd rework it. Finally, I just did it myself. I went through and edited it the last time, and I sent it off to First Books. And of course, I had to pay to get it published, and I had to pay to, you know, do the promotions and so forth. And too, I try to get local people to do reviews on it, but they say, well, because it's a vanity work, we can't do it. You know, it must not be any good. But everybody that's read it so far really enjoys it. They think it's good. You know?
It's a very good book, and we're going to carry it, and it'll be available through Radio Liberty. The book is called The Flag, My Story, Kidnapped by Red China, by Steve Keebon. If you'd like to get it, soft cover, it's $19.95 plus shipping, and here in California, the tax. But it really gives you this feeling of being there. You did a good job on the book, Steve.
Thank you.
I'm really very, very pleased with it, and I'll have to admit I was very touched as I read this and read the foreword by John Noble, who I tried to reach 20 years ago. He had actually been a slave in Russia. He wrote a book called I Was a Slave in Russia, and he was sent there after the Second World War. He was an American living in Eastern Europe and set off to Siberia, where, of course, he was kept for many years. It was just a fluke he ever got out. But he met, of course, some of the men who had been abandoned. We abandoned 25,000 American soldiers after the Second World War to die in Siberia. Some of them may still be alive, but our government doesn't want them back. The Russians have offered to send them back, just as they've offered to send back the prisoners from Vietnam. And we don't want them. But, of course, you're not going to hear that from Barbara Walters or Dan Rather or Tom Brokaw. You're supposed to believe, of course, that we would do everything we can to get our soldiers back. But that's really not true. You know, do you have any idea how lucky you are to have gotten back? You know that we did abandon 8,000 men.
Oh, yeah, that was really fortunate. I think, of course, the good Lord was looking after me. He kept me from freezing to death. He kept me from starving to death. He kept me from dehydrating, you know, because so I was going over weeks without water, and several weeks without food, you know. Anyway, when you were being interrogated, if you weren't in your cell when they delivered the food, you didn't eat. If they allowed you one cup of water a day, and if you weren't there, you didn't get it.
Well, of course, but the thing is, of course, they do this sort of thing to try to break your spirit and break your will. And, of course, then, of course, when you begin to get the acidosis from not eating and not having anything to drink, well, your mind isn't working clearly.
Right, your tongue swells up, your head aches, you know, you're always sick.
Well, our telephone number is 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. If you're out there across America, you have a question, a comment, why give us a call, and we'd love, of course, to hear from you and, of course, to get your thoughts on this story. And, of course, you were then in prison for, what, about 3 years?
Almost 32 months.
Almost 32 months. Uh-huh. So it's not quite 3 years.
Not quite 3 years, right.
Were you married at the time you went?
No, huh? And it's a good thing, because those who were married, they used that. It would tell them, your wife's out running around, you know, and tell them all kinds of things, try to break them.
And, of course, everything was a mind game. They were really playing games with your mind.
Right,
a lot of these techniques were being perfected, at the time, so they would know how to control men. They really wanted to know how to break the spirits of Americans, because Americans would react differently than people from other cultures.
Right. They bragged that they would defeat the United States, and they said they didn't care whether it took 5 years, 10 years, 100 years, they're going to defeat us, you know. And they lay out the plan and say how they're going to do it and everything.
Well, I think that they're doing a pretty good job. Our leaders are doing everything they can to build up the best enemy that money can buy, and introducing the same monitoring techniques and approaches here in the United States, collecting dossiers on everybody. They want to know what books you get out of the library now.
Right.
They want access to your medical records, and they passed a law in 1996. They called it the Privacy, a Medical Privacy Act, and, of course, they used words to conceal it, because the Medical Privacy Act was, of course, to open up your medical records to any prying eyes, but they don't want the American people to know that.
Right.
And now, of course, they can monitor your telephone and your email and your fax, all in the name of fighting terrorism, but it doesn't have to have anything to do with fighting terrorism. And, of course, they watch your bank records. They can monitor you from the satellites and watch your home and monitor your home. And of course, the technology that they have today certainly is amazing. I'm sure that Chairman Mao wished he had had that at the time that he was carrying out his social experiment. In fact, David Rockefeller, one of the most powerful men in America, who for 20 years had the Council on Foreign Relations, was the chairman there, and when asked one time if he'd like to run for president, he said, "Why should I step down?" But then, of course, when he came back from China in 1973, in August of 1973, after Chairman Mao had killed between 40 and 80 million people, David Rockefeller said the social experiment in China is one of the most important and significant in history, the social experiment. It was all a social experiment to David Rockefeller, and you'll find that quotation in August, I think, of 1973. Anybody wants the quotation, we can get an exact date for you. The social experiment in China under Chairman Mao, one of the most important and significant in history. And, of course, this was about, of course, almost 20 years after you came home.
Right.
So we do have people who have a different agenda, who have a different outlook on the world. Certainly, I believe they worship a different God and they dream a different dream. Well, what message would you like to leave with our listeners?
I'd like for them to know that, you know, not all prisoners came home. I saw over 15 myself that didn't make it out. And I just want them to wake up to the fact that, you know, the Chinese do intend to destroy us. And they've already bought a U.S. president, and they've bought a lot of her senators and a lot of her politicians. And
I think Ronald Reagan said it best, any nation that will betray its fighting men one day will betray its own citizens.
Right.
And if there's nothing he could do, he tried to get the prisoners back, but of course the people who controlled the government when he was the president had no intention of bringing them back. God bless you, Steve. Thanks so much for being with us, and I'd like to get you on some of our other programs. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Another of our fascinating four tape sets is entitled Concentration Camps, and it's four interviews with people talking about the move to establish concentration camps in the United States. Now, most people say that's foolish talk. We couldn't have that. And yet, if you listen to these tapes, you'll find out that those camps are a reality. They are being set up in case of civil disturbance. And, of course, the authority for the establishment of the concentration camps comes from the executive orders, which were actually put through during the time of the Reagan administration. For documentation of the location and the background to the formation of these camps, their establishment, and what may very well happen or what they may be used for in the future, I suggest you call our 800 number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for America, our values, our future are under attack today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I just want to mention that you have never considered setting up an Institute of the Constitution in your community, you really should. Why? Why would anybody want to set up an institute? What is it? Well, it's a means of teaching others about the Christian history of America, about our Constitution, about our Declaration of Independence, about our Bill of Rights, about our Federalist Papers, about our form of government. It's what you've never, never, never learned in grammar school or high school or college. And I know I went through college. I never understood the difference between a Republican and a democracy. They didn't teach that in when I went to school, first time I ever heard that we weren't a democracy, I was just amazed. How could that be? After all, I was a college graduate. I knew I was so smart, and it was only then that I began to realize that I wasn't educated, I was indoctrinated, and you need to understand the miracle of America. If you'd like to set up an institute and help others learn about what's going on, give them a call at 410-760-9068. That's 410-760-9068. And then, of course, we hope that many of you out there, if you haven't already gotten my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, will want to get it. That's Brotherhood of Darkness. You can get the book for $12.95, or you can get the video for $19.95, or you can get the tape for about $7. You get them all together for $29.95, which is a good deal. And, of course, what we want you to do is get the information to others, because the American people must understand the foundations of our freedom. They must understand who the enemy is. And, of course, there is an enemy that is intent upon creating a one-world government and using the military and financial power of the United States to bring the whole world under the rule of the Antichrist. And that's what it's really all about today, for we struggle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time I have to remind our listeners out across America that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you will want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and for a suggested gift of $20 a month or more, you'll get our four best tapes of the month, you'll get our monthly newsletter, but more than that, you'll be actually helping us as we reach out 5 hours every day, and of course, as you know, our weekend program is heard on 35 stations. We are having an effect. People are listening. People are getting educated, but we quite frankly need your help to keep doing what we're doing. So if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, our number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV. War. And then, of course, we hope that, of course, many of you out there would want to consider getting our latest video. It's called Iraq, the Untold Story. It'll tell you the truth of what the Iraq War was really all about, and it'll give you an overview of all of the wars of the last century, and, of course, the fact that we are today in World War III. Oh, the American people don't know that. I mean, oh, there are no bombs dropping on our communities at the present time, but they're going to be violence and biological and chemical and perhaps nuclear attacks right here in America. And that's why we're spending $4 to $5 billion setting up relocation camps all across America. If you haven't heard our four tape set on concentration camps, or you haven't gotten our concentration camp special, you need to get that. You need to understand what's going on, and you need to help us educate others. Because only if there are enough people who care can we begin to influence what's going on in America today. And, of course, if you out there have not established an Institute of the Constitution in your community, you need to. It's a system of actually videos. There are 12 half-hour programs that teach you and your children and your friends and the people in your church about the Christian history of America. The most carefully kept secret in America is that this country was founded by Christians on Christian principles, and everybody at the time knew this was a Christian nation. It's just that since we've gotten so well educated, people have forgotten that and the fact that the Masons took over the United States Supreme Court, and for 30 years, Masons dedicated to converting America from a Christian to a secular nation controlled the Supreme Court from 1941 to 1971, and the fact that your ministers, and no one will tell you that, is simply a reflection of the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. All that's covered in the all of that is covered and documented in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. And if you don't have a copy of it, you need to get it. That's Brotherhood of Darkness. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We hope that you, of course, want to get a copy of our latest video, which is called Iraq, the Untold Story. There's a syllabus that goes with that, and it has a lot of the documentation on the causes of the wars of the last century, about the little group that today controls Washington, D.C. It's called Project for the New American Century. And we actually pulled their information down off of their website, and you can read it all as they lay out their plan for a new international order headed by America. But I'll tell you what, God is not going to honor these men because they are trying to bring about a one-world government, and that's exactly what God got after Nimrod for and really broke up the society that Nimrod tried to build. And he's going to destroy this society because America has turned against God. We have become a pagan nation where you can sell a lot more copies of Harry Potter in any one day than you can, of course, of the Bible, and people are willing to put their money into that rather than preserving our society. Well, we ask you to pray for America. Remember our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV, or pray for our leaders, pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan, goodbye. May the Lord be with you.